If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
I remember getting the ambulance journey from the hospital to Harold's Cross. My mom looked out the window and she saw the men. She was like, this is the only bit of Ireland I've seen since I've been here. I wish I had more time to see more.
Telling your own story, especially when it involves grief and loss, can be something that is exceptionally difficult to do. I know that from my own experiences, and I know Venetia would probably say the same as well, but our guest this week, Sean Kennedy, tells the story of loving and caring for and losing his mother in really an exceptional way. Sean is a tenor, a writer, and a performer, and his beautiful show, 9 Weeks, recently received widespread acclaim. Sean is an amazing person. I hope he's not embarrassed hearing me say that. And sitting with him and listening to the story of how he flew to Australia to help his mom in a time when she needed him most, and caring for her despite not knowing how to amidst unbelievably difficult circumstances, and bringing her home to Ireland is incredible. And I want to thank Sean from the bottom of our hearts for coming on and being a guest.
This week's guest is a tenor, writer, and performer whose beautiful show, 9 Weeks, received widespread acclaim at this year's Dublin Fringe Festival. 9 Weeks deals with Sean Kennedy's experience of bringing his terminally ill mother home from Australia at the hands of an abusive partner. Now, before we speak about this particular experience, Sean, could you perhaps tell us a little bit of background about your family life before your mum moved to Australia and how that inspired your previous Fringe production, Boy?
And you're very welcome.
Yes, lovely to meet you.
You too.
So I guess to jump straight in, when I was a kid, my parents had a very difficult relationship. My father was very abusive. And I guess we all suffered at the hands of that. And as the years went by, I was about 10, I think, when she finally had the strength to kind of try and separate. So they began to break apart at that point. And there's a load of mess that happens in between. And around the time I was 15, my mom, I guess, left. Mm-hmm. So she left and she moved between Australia and Wexford, I guess.
That's quite a big distance.
Yeah. She met a New Zealander and he had a family in Australia. And so she spent some time over there. And then I guess me and my sister saw very little of her from that point on for a long block of time. Mm-hmm. I guess that is what the first show that I made was about. Boy. So it was about the struggle that my mom suffered at the hands of my father, and me and my sister the same. At that point, I felt like my mom had abandoned me and my sister.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because it's a very brave thing for her to have done to go. But that must have been just like a death for you guys. Like, it must have been so hard.
Yeah, and I thought this might come up talking to you about 9 weeks, because in experiencing grief when my mom passed away, it felt not dissimilar to the pain that I'd felt at a different point in my life. Just it's hard to say, not as intense, but we just looked after each other and we tried to get on with our lives. And that was a bit of a rocky journey as well. And at the end of that piece, boy, the show, I kind of tried to be positive. I tried to just say, you know, well, I want my mom to be happy. At least she's safe, as far as I knew. So I guess a couple of years passed by and my mom got a terminal diagnosis of cancer. And actually what had happened was my sister, she wasn't doing too great, and she decided to venture over to Australia to see my mom. And actually while she was there, my mom was diagnosed. And over that time, my sister then was living with my mom and minding her, and it all kind of came out in the woodwork of her, my mom's new partner, and how horrible he was and how cruel he was, and how he was horrible to my sister as well. And
so it's history repeating in one way,
I guess. Yeah. So my mom, like, she had a mastectomy and she went through chemotherapy, and after a period of recovery, my sister had to come back to Ireland after it was about a year and a half. She couldn't renew her visa, but my mom had sort of stabilised at that point. And it was about maybe it was a couple of years after that then that there was a return of the cancer. And I remember it was the summer of 2017. So I found out probably early, maybe May, April or May. And my mom phoned me and told me that she'd been given a terminal diagnosis at that point. And my immediate reaction was like, okay, come home. Yeah. You know, like, come home. I want you to come home. And she was like, well, there's nowhere for me to go now at this point. I can't look after myself. She was back with this partner. And I said to her, I was like, oh, we'll figure it out. Yeah. You can just come stay with me. You know, I don't care. Like, I just want to see as much of you as possible between
now and then.
Basically. She wasn't really keen on coming back because I guess she didn't feel like she'd anywhere to go. That was one thing. And she didn't want to leave this abusive relationship, even though they were living separated. And she decided to stay, and she began to say that, you know, I'd be fine. I'm not going to let this beat me. So she was denying
what was happening.
And so I got very angry, and I started going to see a counsellor. And it was very difficult because I was dealing with feeling like all the other issues before that. I felt like, you know, I was like, well, maybe she doesn't love me, or maybe, like, but I really want to see her and I want to come home. And it all got very messy and I got very angry, and I didn't rush over to her because I was like, I can't deal with this. I don't know if she wants me there. If I go over there, what's going to happen? And then October rolled around, and my mom's brother called me, and he just said, he was like, your mom is really bad. We think she's, I mean, this often happens with cancer. People are like, it's the last bit, it's the last bit. And, you know, there's so many last bits.
Or you get told they're fine.
And then
the last bit happens.
So my uncle, Eamon, and my aunt, Regine, decided to send me over to try and bring her home. And I remember joking, saying, I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to bring her home. She'll come home if she wants to come home.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm going to ask her, you know. So I didn't know what to expect. And I remember phoning her saying, look, Eamon is offering to pay for my ticket over to pick you up. And she was like, oh my God. She was like, come over. Aww. I'd love you to come over. She's like, I'd love to see you. I can show you all the places I do my art. And I'd love to show you Coochie Mudlow Island. And she was like, oh, you'll love it over here. You'll just love it. And she was so excited. And I felt like, I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is what I want, and this is what I need. I wasn't expecting that, you know. So then I spoke to her again, and she was like, well, I don't know if I'm ready to come back to Ireland, but you know what? Just tell them that you bring me back and come over and just stay and we'll have a holiday.
I
love it.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, all right. She was like, no, you're not to tell Bridget. And I was like, okay, I won't. So I was like, I went over like delighted. I was like, oh, this is going to be like great. I completely forgot about the context of the situation. I was like, I'm basically getting a paid holiday to Australia to see my mom. So I went over, and that was my first long distance flight like that. And
when I got off the plane, I was expecting to see my mom that I remembered and give her a big hug. And and she was like barely able to move.
Oh,
she was like
God.
Kind of, well, first her partner met me and brought me over to her, and she was like on a walking stick and she was like hunched over in pain. And I, when I went to her, she was like, oh, she was like, don't hug me too. I'm sorry, love. She was like, it's just, I'm in a lot of pain at the moment. And it just like hit me then. Like, I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is awful. Yeah.
That must have been very hard to come off a flight where you have one thing, and a long flight like that, where you believe one thing is going to be on the other side. And the responsibility then when you see, like, that's, God, had to have been very hard.
And I didn't really know what I was going into. I just thought, I'm going to try bring her home.
Yeah.
And we got there, and the first thing I felt was just my mom being in so much pain. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what medication she was on. I didn't know who was looking after her. I didn't know what was going on. But I could see that she was like in agony. And I just remember saying to her, I was like, what are you supposed to be taking? What can you take? Surely you don't need to be in this much pain. What's going on? And she was like, oh, I have this and I don't know when I'm taking that. And basically she'd, in a mixture of being in denial about the condition she was in, she had been in and out of treatment with like a palliative unit had started taking care of her in the Brisbane matter. And they'd kind of prescribed her things, and she was kind of helter-skelter taking them bits all over the place and was kind of like, oh, I don't know. And so the next night then, she just was, it was like this, she was just in so much agony. It was like, I can't even describe seeing the pain that she was in. She couldn't breathe, and I was sitting on the bed beside her, and she was just like wailing. It was like this sharp pain across her chest, and her hands were sweating. And I was like, Mom, I was like, we have to get you an ambulance. She was like, no. She's like, no. She's like, I don't know what to do. And I was like, well, we could just go to hospital. She's like, no, we can't. And she was kind of like pushing against it, but she was in agony.
Yeah.
And the next morning, I was like, look, we're going to the doctor today. We have to. We absolutely have to. This. So we went, and she got a scan, and the doctor immediately ran to the hospital. He was like, you know, you have to go to the hospital. She had a thing called a pleural effusion, and cancer causes like white blood cells, like a liquid, to build up in the space between your lungs and your chest cavity, and it creates pressure
and
it's extreme pain. It feels like you're drowning. It's horrible. So they told her that she'd have to have that drained pretty quickly, and it was a procedure, but that she wouldn't be able to fly for at least 6 weeks. So, and my return ticket with her was for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And so I didn't even ask. I was like, you're not going to be able to fly in this condition. So I was like, just get the procedure. I'll see if the ticket can be extended. So we did that, and I began to kind of take over her care. So I had nothing else to do there. So it was I really just wanted to spend time with her, but I ended up kind of managing her medication and keeping the house clean and trying to basically look after her. She spent a lot of the time like sleeping or like even in pain on the medication, and we couldn't really leave the house. She couldn't drive anymore because of the pain, even after the procedure. And all the while her separated partner that they were sharing the house with then started this whole other thing of like vibing me out, as he put it. So it got very hard.
I think it's really good that you're talking about the medication side of things, because I think actually Venetia and I have never talked about this before, but
please.
With both my parents, I really like, I feel so much for this side that you're talking about this story, because when both my parents were sick, we had to manage their medication. We didn't know what we were doing. You know, it's a very scary thing to try and manage someone's pain with medications that could harm them, and you don't know anything about it. You have no point of reference. You have no idea. Like, I always remember my sister and I one night, my dad was in so much pain, and we gave him the morphine, and we weren't sure if we gave him the right amount. And we were both sitting there going, okay, we've given it to him. Fingers crossed he wakes up, because he was sleeping then, and both of us sat up all night going, oh my God, I hope he wakes up, oh my God. And he did, obviously he woke up, but that feeling of responsibility when you don't know anything
it's
terrifying.
You want to help someone, the person you love, not feel pain, and then you're like, I just remember my hands sweating. I was like, I can either give you this, it's not working, you're in crying in agony, and I'm like, but I'm afraid to give you more because I'm afraid I'll kill you.
Yeah.
And
it's like
it's added pressure to an already horrendous situation.
Yeah. Even though I was living in the house with her, she was on like background pain medication, and then you have pain spikes and you take these
top ups
yeah, basically. Exactly, yeah. And it meant that all the conversations that I wanted to have with her, like almost, it was really difficult to try and find the time to do that. Even though I'd ask her, it'd be like, it's like talking to someone when they're drunk, basically. Mm. And it was really difficult over the weeks with my mom's partner basically picking on me on the side. My mom wouldn't see that, or like he was kind of doing these.
She's probably too ill to
register.
Yeah, but also she was in a relationship with a person that, like, I guess she'd have to have turned a blind eye to his bad behaviour in some way for her to live there herself.
Do you think, I mean, this is an aside, but would she have been conditioned to that from her previous relationship down through the years?
Well, you know, at the very end, it all comes to a head and she faces him down and she stands up to him even though she's collapsed in her chair and she can barely talk and she's on breathing apparatus. And what had happened was he had openly, verbally attacked me and said horrible things to me in front of her. And it was just, he had dropped the guard. And so there was a massive shift, and my mum's friend Helen and Barbara came in, and it was like an intervention, and they helped her, I guess, stand up to him in a sense. But when it came down to it, she was on her own with him, and she asked me to wait in the other room, and she just told him that, you know, I don't love you. You know, the moment that you spoke to my son like that, I could see who you were, really, and this is over, and I want you to leave the house. And he wouldn't, and he didn't, and he was like, I love you, I'm not going anywhere, you don't know what you're saying, he's controlling you, he's, you know, making you sick. And, you know, but she just threatened him at that point. She said, if you don't leave the room, I'm going to call the police. So he fired off, and the next day, early that morning, she woke up and she was having some type of, like, it was like a seizure attack or something. I didn't know what it was, and I was very frightened, so I phoned the palliative unit and they told me what to give her. She had like a, at this point, she had a shunt in her arm.
Oh, yeah.
So there was like medication in the fridge.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's like a relaxant, and the nurse asked me if her partner, I did air in inverted commas there.
you guys couldn't see that, but important to the,
to the story, if he was around. And I just panicked and started crying, and I was like, this is what's happened. He's, you know, she's asked him to leave and he won't, and he's saying that I'm making her sick, and I feel really frightened. And so she sent a social worker and a nurse around to the house immediately. And my mom's friend, then I phoned her, and she told me not to worry. She was like, you'll be okay. And so she came, drove up, and I just explained to them what had happened. And they could see my mom had deteriorated a lot at that point. And so they said, well, we can't take him out of the house, but we can take you out of the house if you want. There's a private hospital room for situations like of need. And I just looked at my mom and she just said to me, she was like, do you want to go? And I was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I do. And she was like, well, then we're gone. And the social worker took out a power of attorney form and she was like, you don't need to worry about this other person. She was like, if your mother is happy to sign this, we can sign over enduring power of attorney to you now and you don't need to be frightened. So that all happened very quickly, and then they moved us into a hospital room, a private hospital room, which is beautiful. My mom's friend came with us, and it was very difficult for my mom because she, I guess that was her life, everything in that house, she felt like she was leaving behind. And that night she asked me to record her talking, and she just explained to me what the last 15 years with that person had been like and how she regretted staying with him and how she felt sad about it and how she missed me and my sister and she had so many regrets about not spending time with us over that time. And but she wanted me to record it because she wanted me to, it was like she wanted me to know the, if anything happened, that that we'd have like some sort of proof of how she felt after she left, because there's been trouble since with her house. She's a house in Wexford, and he went after that basically. And so the recording is really actually very sad and grim because she's talking about all these horrible things. And I guess it was to answer your earlier question about it happening, that she'd met this man very similar to my father in a lot of ways, and she said this thing to me. She was like, you know, why did I always go for the bird with the broken wing? You know, she said, I just wanted to love him, and I wanted to see the good in him, and every time he did something I just wanted to see that he was capable of love, and he just took advantage of me over and over and over again.
What did it mean to you, Sean, that she was able to reach this point before she died, then you were there with her?
I guess I was so exhausted at that point. It was really sad because I wanted to have had this with her so much sooner, you know. I was like, I wanted to have spent more of my life with her. And it was all very intense because I didn't know how close she was to the end at that point. And she seemed like she was like very near the end that night, and the next morning she had another lease of life, and the doctor came in, they assessed her, and then things started to change very quickly again. The doctor was like, she said to my mom, she was like, is it still your wish to go back to Ireland? And my mom was like, oh, of course, I'd love to see my mother and my daughter. And you know, I just remember being like, why is she asking us this? Why? Because at this point,
you thought it's
like,
impossible.
Like, she'd had like this procedure twice at this point, and like she was on breathing apparatus, and the doctor was like, I think that you should take the risk, and you have a 24-hour window. You need to book a flight immediately and go, and I think you should take the risk, and. She said, I'll write you a letter to certify to fly. We'll find out the best way. She's like, you're not going to be able to bring oxygen with you because we can't get clearance for that.
Long trip as well.
So I remember just thinking, I was like, oh my God, are we going to be able to do this? And so everything started then. I was like, Mom, where's your passport? And she left it in the house behind us.
Fuck.
And I knew that. I was like, this person is the type of person that would run through. He went through all my stuff when I was there as well, and would constantly rummage through things. It was like one of his games where he'd move things and see if you'd notice. So I went back with my mom's best friend, Helen, who is an amazing woman. I can't stress that enough. Incredible Australian, tough as nails, but kindest heart. I love her to bits. I still am in touch with her. And we got in the car and I was like, okay, we'll just go in. I'll just say that, like, I'm grabbing like a weekend bag for mom, that she's in hospital, and that, you know, we'll be back to the house, and that she's just having a temporary stay. And I was like, I'll, you know, get a bit, so I'm, you distract him and I'll go into the bedroom and see. And I knew where it was. I went in, Helen started talking to your man, and I went in, and I just remember the mom before opening the drawer, and I was like, oh God. And I pulled it back, and there was her passport sitting there, and I just grabbed a pair of her knickers, wrapped it in it, and stuffed it into a bag, and with a load of other things. I was like, okay, great. I was like, when I came out of the room, Helen could see in my face
that you had.
So we nipped out of there, and before he'd let us leave the house, he was like, "I want your mother's car keys." And I was like, "Oh," it's like, "Okay, I guess so." And thinking, I was Oh, here you go. And so we belted out of there, and that night we got on a plane. And at the airport, we left the oxygen there, and the doctor had warned me, actually, after she'd asked if we were up for going back, she brought me and Helen into another room, and she basically said that my mom might die on the flight, and that if she stops breathing, to refuse resuscitation, because she said that they will like crack her ribs and she'd die very painfully as opposed to suffocating. And of course, hearing that, I was completely frightened and terrified, but also spurned on to like do it. I was like, we have to do this. We have to get back home. So on the flight, I guess it just was, it was hell. It was hell. It was really hell. Like, as soon as the cabin started to pressurize, her breathing was like suppressed, and I guess every minute of that flight, it was like 23 hours, felt like so long. And I was holding her hand, and she was almost begging me for like help, and I was like, "Mom, I can't do anything except all I can do is give you this stuff." And I spaced out like the different drugs that she had, and again, it came down to like the doctor that so kindly put us on this track and gave us that letter to go. She was like, "Just give her anything." She was like, "At this stage, just give her anything." And it felt like I was just feeding her drugs, and she was coming in and out of consciousness, and like there was people looking at us, and it was just very that was the hardest part, because I was terrified that she was going to die. And as the first flight was starting to descend, she was like, "I need an ambulance, I need an ambulance." And I was like, "No," I was like, "We can't, because if we get stuck in Abu Dhabi, that's it, we're stuck." And so there was like an attendant, and we got stopped, and he was like, is this woman okay? And I was like, "Oh yeah." I was like, "She's totally fine.
She's great.
She's totally great. Yeah, she's just on a few painkillers. She's
Your acting. Acting skills came in.
And I remember just getting on that second flight and just thinking, "Oh my God, whatever happens now, at least we're on the way back to Ireland." So even if she does die, we'll be back in Ireland. And we got to the point where we were coming up to Ireland, and I was just like sweating. I just remember thinking, "Oh my God, we're nearly there, we're nearly there, we're nearly there." And the plane landed down, and I just remember thinking, "Oh fuck." So, and it was just a really slow, gentle process of getting my mom off the plane and into a wheelchair. And then I remember just thinking everything was bright and starry, and I was like rolling around, and like I was like, "I don't know what's going on." And we got out and into the arrivals, and my aunts like ran over to us, and they just like looked like a mirror of what I'm sure I looked like when they looked like upset. And we brought my mom straight to Talla Hospital, and it was a sad kind of decline from that point on. It didn't feel like really a victory. It was like we got back to Ireland, but my mom was so debilitated by the flight. It was like it had really taken it out of her, and I was so drained and exhausted from the weeks before. And she went into Talla Hospital, and she was in a ward, and my mom just, she wasn't able to explain what she needed. She was too sick and too worn out. And I like begged them to bring her to a hospice. And after that, then it was like another week. And then we got into Our Lady's in Harold's Cross. And it was so beautiful. I remember getting the ambulance journey from the hospital to Harold's Cross. My mom looked out the window, and she saw the mountains, and she was like, "This is the only bit of Ireland I've seen since I've been here. I wish I had more time to see more." And when we got into the hospice, it was so beautiful, and the staff were so wonderful. And
they're amazing.
She said to me, "God, I hope I live long enough to enjoy this." And she lived for a week after that, and I was in with her every day, and the family were coming in every day, and it was just,
on the Thursday before she passed away, on the Monday the 12th of February, and the Thursday before, the hospice went around with a drinks cart, and she was still sharp enough to be like, I'll have a brandy, and then she winks and elbows me and she's, that's for you.
That drinks cart. Yeah. So I've had experience with that drinks cart in Harold's Cross. And the story will always stay with me, but they came in and they saw us drinking whiskey out of plastic cups in Harold's Cross. And they said, nope. Someone came in and said, nope, we can't have this. And we thought we were in trouble.
Yeah.
And my dad was sitting there going, guys, I don't want to lose this bed. Everybody, stop drinking out of it. Put it away. And they just came in with glasses.
Oh, yeah.
They said, you can't drink it out of a plastic cup. And I just think that like they the way they are in that place, they do things that are remarkable.
Second to none. They're incredible.
Yeah.
But they're able to help you, Sean, because, you know, obviously, and I'm not, you know, but when the person dies, that is a really big thing, a big moment. And you, if you don't have experience with it.
Yeah.
Which I'm imagining that maybe you didn't. You don't know what to do, and they help make it that much easier to help you, guide you. Did you find that that helped to kind of guide you through those steps in the initial hours and days?
It was lovely at the end. It was frightening at the end in some ways, but it was lovely. It was, you know, like you never know exactly when someone is going to leave. And it was, I remember the Sunday night, my Aunt Roisin was like, I'm going to stay with her tonight. And I was like, thinking, I was like, wondering why. I was like, no, I was like, she should be fine. It's eight. And I was thinking, maybe she's like another week, I don't know. And but I was like, no, she's, my mom is like as tough as nails, I don't know when she's gonna go, like, and she doesn't want to. And then the next morning I woke up and I got a call, and Roisin was like, you need to come, like, your mom, like, she's gone, lost consciousness. So I went in, and my sister came in, and the family were all around, and it was like, you know, it, like, it was really strange. Like, that at that point, she was lying in the bed, and she didn't like lying down because she had fluid in her lung. And I started to panic. I was like, no. I was like, no, she has to sit up. She has to sit up. And the nurse came over to me, and she was like, oh, it's okay. She was like, it's okay. She needs to lie down now. And I remember just thinking, oh, this is it. This is the very end. And, like, a few hours passed, and my granny was in and out, and I just wanted to be on my own with her and my sister. And so my Aunt Grania, who's amazing, she was like, she cleared them all out. She was like, no, they need a minute, like, leave her. And she was like, you older ones, go off and have lunch in the canteen and whatever. And she hooshed them out. And then me and my sister, we sang to my mom a Mamas and a Papas song that we used to sing to her when we were kids. And we just talked to her, and we told her that we'd be okay. And I sat down beside her, and I held her arm, and my Aunt Grania came back in then, and she was like, I think you guys need lunch. And I just looked at my mom, and I knew she was going to go. And I said, I was like, no, I was like, Lorna, I was like, don't leave, to my sister. I was like, come here. And I held my mom, and I just said, look, it's okay. I was like, you can leave, it will be okay. And really strangely, a priest came into the room, and I turned around, and I was like, my mom is just about to go. I was like, don't say anything. And my Aunt Grania put her arm around us, and she just took her last breath. And it was just like this moment of like a shock. Like, and then, of course, like, I could just hear this wailing outside then. Of when it's that moment that everyone is there for, and I could hear my grandmother wailing, like, she was so sad that she hadn't been in the room. No one else was there except me and my sister and my Aunt Grania and this priest, oddly enough. And it was then I wanted everyone just to go away, and I just wanted to hold my mom and say goodbye to her. And like 20 people gushed into the room, and I just took a step back with my sister and gave her a hug, and I called my mom's best friend straight away over in Australia. And then the rest of it just all happens as it does, you know.
I think it's really amazing that you would share that part of the story, because there are other people that have been in that position where it is scary, and it is, you know, not peaceful or easy. So thank you. And thank you so much for coming in to join us.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.